shotgun for Rodgers. Takes the snap. Rodgers off his back foot. Throws it to the right side. A rebound. Caught by Adams. He's going to take it all the way. Touchdown, Jets. Big play. And that connection, Rodgers to Adams, does the trick on Halloween.
No one better. Ian Eagle on Westwood One. Welcome to the show. That was quite a turnaround last night for the Jets. It looked as awful as it could possibly look in the first half, but the Texans weren't able to take advantage of some of the Jets' miscues. So they're only up 7-0 at halftime, Perloff. And then Aaron Rodgers, to his credit, put together a really solid second half. He was almost perfect, had a perfect passer rating, in fact. Three touchdown drives, an all-time catch to Garrett Wilson that at first was ruled incomplete. Then it looked like the shin was down, and now he's got a catch that rivals Odell Beckham Jr. All those years ago. And, of course, Devontae Adams. That's a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
Because if they had lost this game, what is Devontae Adams doing there? You know, Rodgers made his bed, but then he convinced Devontae Adams to ask for a trade or however this worked out. Maybe Devontae Adams didn't need a lot of convincing. And at least now there's glimmers of hope.
Yeah, we were confused about how the Jets were favored in this game. And C.J. Stroud obviously just does not like playing against this defense. Remember, he got killed against it last year. He, for some reason, whatever the scheme the Jets have is just, he had to extend plays and he was not comfortable with his sort of scrubby receivers because, you know, Nico Collins is out there. So the Texans had a lot of opportunities in the first half. Joe Mixon was running really well, did not take advantage. That's really where the game was lost. They should have went into halftime with a 2-touchdown lead. And I said, when the Jets are hanging around, the Jets are hanging around. That is not good for the Texans. Then they just totally ran out of steam in the second half. By the way, the Jets, I have a totally random question.
Yeah.
How good is Breece Hall? Because I feel like Breece Hall is very effective, but I sometimes wonder if he leaves yards on the field. Like, sometimes he makes some wrong decisions. Mm. I feel like he should really be shredding it with this Jets line. Like, there's a scenario where that offense is really good, where Breece Hall is running, and you're throwing Devontae Adams and Garrett Wilson, and yet the most points they've scored this year are 22.
You're right. I mean, they have this sort of, it's not necessarily a two-headed monster. They've got this rookie in Braylon Allen that they also seem to like as well. But yeah, Breece Hall, if you play fantasy football, yeah. Breece Hall was supposed to be not the next Christian McCaffrey, the current Christian McCaffrey. He was supposed to be the guy. He went first in a lot of fantasy drafts and lived up to that.
He was supposed to be a breakout star this year, and you see flashes. You know, you see flat, and last night you saw the flashes with Garrett Wilson and Rodgers, and you see flashes with Adams. I just don't know they can sustain this. There's going to be a trip up. They're going to lose a game that they should have won.
So this is the big takeaway from the Jets game last night. If you didn't watch it, don't worry. It wasn't all that amazing. You can watch the Garrett Wilson highlight on social media. But this was Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit on the conversation they had with Rodgers before the game.
We talked to him this week, and I mean, Aaron is very smart. I mean, obviously, whatever you think of him, he's a polarizing figure. We know that. But he's a very well-read guy, very smart, and is very convincing. I mean, we're sitting there going, wait a second. They can't run the table, and then he makes you think they can.
Yeah, by the time we're done, we're like, he makes a good point. Yeah, right. They got a shot. If they can win Thursday, man, who knows?
Off you go into the wild blue yonder.
This is why Aaron Rodgers will make an excellent cult leader one day. He is very convincing to get you on his page and his side of things. I kid, kind of. But, you know, you look at the rest of the schedule for them, it is actually on paper quite easy. So as easy as it will get in the NFL, mind you. And so is there a glimmer there? Maybe. You know, Perloff, can we talk about the Houston Texans side of this?
Yeah.
So the Texans side of this, let's hear a little from C.J. Stroud. Because if you are watching the Texans, this was a sexy Super Bowl pick for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Kind of followed that trend of you get a quarterback with a breakout season, and then they get humbled a little bit in the playoffs because that game in Baltimore, they were just overmatched. But then they come back bigger and better the next year. So here's C.J. Stroud saying last night was a wake-up call for them.
I would say, you know, we just got to honestly just play football better, execute better, stop pointing the finger, and realize, you know, at the end of the day, like, this is not winning football. And we can't keep squeezing our way by every game.
Yeah, these one-score games that they've been the beneficiary of, even going back to last year. But did you hear what he said there? We can't be pointing the finger. you know, what's going on behind the scenes with the Texans? Because rightfully so, I think DeMeco Ryans is a great coach. We give him a lot of credit for this turnaround of the Texans and all the positivity. But I thought that was an interesting way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, do you have any idea who he's talking? Is it C.J. Stroud mad because nobody's protecting him?
Is it the offensive line? But again, if you're down to backups.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Unless it's Laremy Tunsil, the left tackle, who was giving up some pressure last night. But again, you know, if Stephon Diggs was healthy, people would probably immediately go to, well, what is Stephon Diggs doing behind the scenes? You know, is what is he saying? But, you know, you can't blame this guy. He's not there. He's hurt. Same with Nico Collins, but Collins will be back.
They had some massive mistakes last night. They were sloppy last night. And they were sloppy against the Colts, too, last week. You know, it's interesting to me. They were talking about how DeMeco Ryans said, I love the offense this year. I'm like, you love the offense this year. You guys look like a shadow of the offense. He's like, no. DeMeco Ryans wants to hand the ball off, Maggie. That's all he wants to do. He is a defensive head coach, and you see it. And I got to be honest, like, the formula could work. They might be able to Joe Mixon and defense this up. But then Will Anderson got hurt in the first half. It was never the same the rest of the game. If you have Danico Autry, who was suspended, coming back up the middle, Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, you can be like the 2019 San Francisco 49ers and really just destroy the other quarterback, control the ball on offense. It's a good formula. So the thing is, you're not going to blow out anyone. I think people thought this team was going to be C.J. Stroud throwing for 4,500 yards and 35 touchdowns.
Be an MVP.
DeMeco Ryans is like, that's not what I want to do. I want to be Jimmy G, 2019 San Francisco 49ers.
Well, I still think they're going to win the division, obviously, right? Because the Titans might be one of the worst teams in the NFL. They traded DeAndre Hopkins. The Jags have not shown... This has just been a bad season.
They're too far behind.
Too far behind. And then obviously the Colts now make the switch in a more permanent way to Joe Flacco. But you already beat them. So
yeah, Colts are going to be 8-9, 9-8 for the rest of time.
I'm sure their fans are thrilled to hear you say that.
But the Texans will get Nico Collins back. And he, I could argue, is a top 8 wide receiver in the NFL. That's a huge difference.
So here's more from Stroud saying how embarrassing this loss was last night.
It's hard, you know, to just sit here right now and think about what happened because you didn't watch film yet. But, of course, you know, it's embarrassing. And, you know, to come out here on a primetime game and, you know, get embarrassed like that is never fun. And, you know, I believe, you know, we have to be better in a lot of areas. You know, and that starts with me.
All right. So, listen, saying the right things. And, yeah, the first half of the Jets was actually more embarrassing for the Texans. The Texans were just not playing great. And there had some injuries, like Will Anderson, you mentioned, leaving. The Jets had there was a moment last night that really could have been not an all-timer, Perloff, but adding to the list, the laundry list of Jets futility. Now, they won the game, so we'll give them that. But when this low light happened, I thought Aaron Rodgers may just walk off the field.
Rodgers. On the flip, the end around, left side, Corley, 15, 10, 5, he's in. Malachi Corley. Texans get a huge break. Corley coughed it up before, crossing the plane in celebration. Ball ends up in the end zone. It's a touchback. Texans have it.
Yeah, you heard that right. Thank you, Texans Radio. Malachi Corley of the Jets basically just walking into, jogging into the end zone, drops the ball at the half-yard line because he was celebrating too quick and lost his focus.
That's not good, huh?
How does this happen to professional
athletes? No, he didn't lose it. That's not what happened. I think it was a cool celebration. Like, I think he was celebrating too early. It's not lost his focus. It's not like, I'm just a little distracted. I dropped the ball. I think he was being cool.
No, the focus was, I'm going to be in the end zone, but you weren't yet. That's how you lose the focus.
Yeah.
I just don't understand with professional athletes. And add on top of this, that would have been his first NFL touchdown. How do you botch that? I mean, you can't live this down. And there could be a real serious consequence. I don't think they're going to cut him. They could, but they probably won't. This is just so embarrassing for him.
It's not even embarrassing. It's beyond embarrassing. Like, kind of makes him... It colors the rest of his career because Deshaun Jackson did this and he was already a star. He was awesome. Like, there's no way they were going to cut him. But I feel like Malachi Corley, I mean, how many catches does he have? Does he have a catch?
Oh, I don't know.
Like a couple?
He
didn't get another target the rest of the game. Well, I mean, of course not. They already have Davante Adams, Mike Williams, and Garrett Wilson. Like, that guy, he better be really good on special teams.
But Alan Lazard got put on IR, yeah. So maybe you're thinking, all right, yeah. Opens the door for him. Yeah,
he's got one catch on the season.
One catch, okay. He better be. I'll bet
zero
you.
Touchdowns. Oh, we forgot to ask Kostas about that. He Nick Kostas joined us. He had the Malachi Corley anytime touchdown. You know, we already buried him over his Yankees. We'll give Nick a pass.
I was thinking about if you're Malachi Corley, like you got to prove it in your run blocking. The worst thing that could happen is like I'm going to open up some holes and then get called for a holding on a touchdown. Like I was like Malachi Corley, you got to be super careful. Like just don't screw up anything else. Because now I look at that guy, I was like, oh, he's a mistake about to happen.
When he dropped that ball before the end zone, I was like, oh, it's Halloween. I know what the Jets dressed up as, contenders, but they're not. But then in the second half, Rodgers puts together this great, very efficient half of football. They end up winning the game. He thinks they can run the table and make mm-hmm. the playoffs. Let's go to our pal Adrian, who's in Maryland. Adrian, what do you think about the Jets?
Hey, guys, TGI Friday. Hey, this is the ultimate case of prisoner in the moment. The Jets running the table. We're talking about a 3-16, and we're acting like they were undefeated this last night. So they're basically going to have probably 7 wins at the most. Hey, pull up. I got an investigation for you to do for me, okay?
Hit me.
All right. So I'm watching the Eagles game last week, and the ball goes to the sideline, and Big Dom has some headset on. Mm. What's that about? Can you find out for me what's going on there?
Wait, Big Dom is basically the security guy yeah. for Nick Sirianni.
Maybe he had the headset on that the coaches wear.
Yeah, yeah. No, Big
he's
Dom's running.
Plays
he's
now.
Running the team. Are you implying some kind of Connor Stallions? Big Dom is tapped into the Giants headset communication? Because I'm down with that theory.
I need you to investigate for me and get back to me about that because I seen it and I started laughing. I was like, what does Big Dom have headsets on? Headset on for? Is he calling plays or something going on here?
Is it plugged in? Are we sure?
I don't know. Maybe it's not plugged in. Maybe it's just a prop. It could have been a Halloween prop, right?
Adrian, we love it. Thanks so much for weighing in. Yeah, Big Dom became a celebrity because, like an idiot, he messed with Dre Greenlaw in a big game where the Eagles were playing the 49ers last year, and he got suspended.
Well, that it was revealed that Big Dom is shadow running the Eagles. He is the most important human being on that side. You have
is
to
it
understand.
A shadow? I think yeah. it's right out there.
Investigative report. If I found out anything negative about Big Dom, everyone I know would kill me if I revealed any of this. He is like... Like there's certain people who are just sports gods in Philadelphia. Yeah, obviously Dr. J, Chase Utley, Allen Iverson, Big Dom. Like that's what we're
oh,
talking
yeah.
about.
The Mount Rushmore. Big Dom's on it. He wouldn't
Dom,
fit.
No, Big Dom is I mean, I don't know who's more popular in Philadelphia. I'm not sure who the mayor is. He's more popular than Jalen Hurts. I'll tell you that right now. People can't stand Hurts. The starting quarterback in Philly is always the most hated person. Big Dom 100% approval rating.
Like he's like the guy who gets the sandwiches, isn't he?
Big Dom.
He's the fixer. He's the guy you call when someone gets pulled over for speeding or worse.
We all know that there is another layer of things that go on in an NFL team behind the scenes. Like what the coach has to deal with that we don't know about. Like that's what Big Dom does. I mean, it's like
is he doing a great job? I'll ask you.
Yeah, I mean, what have you heard any trouble coming out of Philly recently?
I mean,
except for the head coach takes all the slings and arrows. I don't know that the players are getting any trouble.
I had an article before the season started that Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts can't stand each other, can't be in the same room together.
Yeah,
where was Big Dom on that one? When was he running interference on that amazing moment?
I just know nobody's getting. I can't remember a story where a guy's got arrested or anything like that. I'm sure it's happened, and Big Dom has buried it. He's the he's the fixer. He's the wolf of the
too
Eagles.
Busy eating supersized hoagies.
Say, he must be VIP at Wawa.
That's one thing Andy Reid does and did very well in Philly. Like, he could quash off the field trouble like you'd no other coach in the history of the league. Like,
yeah,
there was more going on that we do not know about. Yeah, you think, like, isn't it amazing that Kansas City has had this trouble-free run for this long?
It's not trouble-free. Yeah. Guys are getting in trouble. It just, for some reason, barely sticks to anybody.
Yeah, they have their own Big Dom. I think he has Andy Reid has a fixer, too. The guy used to follow him around. I don't remember. I'm not sure he's still there. But every team has a Big Dom. I'm sure Buffalo has a Big Dom.
Have you guys, by the way, have you guys heard of the nicknames they're calling Nick Sirianni in Philadelphia?
No, what?
What do you got?
So they're 3-0, right, since he shaved his head. Bic Nick is one of them.
Mm.
Or Baldiani. I've got boots on the ground in Philly. That's what I've been hearing.
I kind of like Bic Nick.
So, Maggie, you've been thinking that Nick Sirianni might be on the hot seat. Is he off the hot seat officially now in the Maggie Gray hot seat rankings?
No way. Nick Sirianni is just one stupid press conference away from being right back on the hot seat. Because you want to know the nickname that I was hearing for him after he shaved his head? Britney Spears.
Yeah.
When she had her meltdown and shaved her head with the paparazzi outside.
But they're hot now. Now they're hot, and now they get a Jacksonville Jaguars team that they definitely can't lose to, right, on Sunday?
Doug Peterson revenge game?
I don't know.
I was joking. I think they absolutely can lose this game on Sunday.
They absolutely can lose this game, but then they got the ghost of the Cowboys coming up. They'll probably win that game.
I thought about the Jags. I'm like, what can team who thinks they're even have an outside shot of being a contender trades away their healthy left tackle? You just paid your quarterback $250 million. Like, here's an idea. Let's get rid of all the protection for him.
Yeah, Cam Robinson, though, they've never loved that guy. Like, did they draft somebody over him?
No, they've got a guy behind him that clearly they like, but that just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I would look at his PFF grades and think twice about that.
855-212-4227. Okay, you're welcome to weigh in on not just the Aaron Rodgers telling Al Michaels they're going to run the table. We've got a couple other poll questions out there for you. Who is feeling the most pressure this weekend and specifically tomorrow? Is it Penn State's James Franklin or is it Ohio State's Ryan Day? Right now, Ryan Day is winning this poll, if you can call it that, 69% to 31% that Ryan Day is under more pressure. Then we asked you, who's the bigger star right now? Freddie Freeman or Mookie Betts? Freddie Freeman winning that poll 77%. And our next guest can weigh in on this with some authority.
All right.
Coming up next, the radio analyst and radio Hall of Famer, the great Susan Waldman's going to join us from the New York Yankees. So we'll get a little postmortem on the Yankees. We'll get her thoughts on the Dodgers as well, as she had an up-close and personal view of that World Series win for L.A. Don't move. Maggie and Perloff. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff, Radio Hall of Famer Susan Waldman will join us in just a few minutes, do a little Yankees post-mortem. But first, Andrew Bogish is here with us. What's up, folks?
Hey, guys. C.J. Stroud talked earlier this week about finishing October strong with a win last night at the Jets so his Texans could hit the final 2 months of the regular season feeling good about themselves. Didn't happen last night in Jersey. Stroud sacked 8 times. Kyemi Fairbairn missed 2 field goals. Will Anderson hurt his left ankle. And the defense allowed 3 second-half touchdowns. Head coach DeMeco Ryans.
We didn't come out and we didn't execute well enough to win the game. We didn't make the right. We didn't make plays in the second half to win the game. So that's frustrating. But that's the NFL. Like, if you want to win, your playmakers have to step up and make plays. And that's what we have to see moving forward.
I don't know if you guys discussed this yet this morning, but there's video of DeMeco Ryans seemingly denying a post-game handshake with Aaron Rodgers. Just kind of walking away from, like, Rodgers is following Ryans while he's talking to other people. And then finally Ryans turns around and Rodgers is right there. And he just quickly breaks eye contact and walks right past him.
Why?
I don't know.
I want to know what's the backstory there.
Is it possible he didn't? I can't imagine he didn't realize it was Aaron Rodgers. Maybe somebody like behind Rodgers got his attention first, but it looks like he brushes off Rodgers. But I have no idea what that would be about.
I mean, maybe DeMeco Ryans is listening to the McAfee interviews every week and just doesn't like them. It's possible.
Yeah.
Usually you fake that stuff for the
cameras. You're in the NFL.
Though.
If there was some kind of political reason or something, you wouldn't be able to shake hands with anybody after the game. There are many different political opinions.
No safe zones.
Yeah, but like a defense coordinator, like, would they have ever really interacted in any meaningful way?
I can't.
Any big games against each other? I mean.
Oh, sure.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Like, you mean players or as coaches?
As players.
Oh, yeah, not much as players, but as...
Oh, maybe something going back to San Francisco versus Green Bay as him as a defensive coordinator?
Yeah, that maybe. I think could have happened.
That was years ago, though, now. That'd be a really long grudge to hold.
I don't know. We watched Sean Payton sticking it to the Carolina Panthers for some reason last week that we couldn't figure out. Division rival, but...
He said he was running out the clock. Actually, Sean Payton would do that to anyone now. He's just fully buying into the Sean Payton jerk narrative.
The The Jets, by the way, snapping a five-game skid with this 21-13 victory. Rodgers, two touchdown passes to Garrett Wilson, one to Davante Adams, all after halftime. First win in four tries for interim coach Jeff Ulbrich.
One of my strengths is to block out the outside noise, you know, but it gets loud, you know, and this team took a lot of shots externally, and the way they just stayed together and worked and kept a positive attitude and just galvanized as a unit.
After their many byes, the Jets are in Arizona. The Texans play the Lions next Sunday night. Rams receiver Puka Nacua hurt his right knee in practice yesterday. That's the same knee that cost him five games already this season, but reports say this issue is not serious, at least for the time being. Tom Coughlin, Mike Holmgren, Mike Shanahan, George Seifert are semifinalists for the Hall of Fame. There are nine coaches total on this list, one of them eventually pushed forward by this special committee for consideration for enshrinement. Victor Wembanyama, 25 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists, 5 blocks, 5 steals in the Spurs' 106-88 win in Utah. Devin Booker scored 40 as the Suns won in the Clippers' new building, 125-119, and the Grizzlies dropped the Bucks to 1-4, 122-99. The Pittsburgh Penguins finally won again, thanks to Sidney Crosby.
Now taken by Crosby, on the far side, cuts in through, he shoots and scores! Sidney Crosby, the overtime game winner! His third of the year, his second winner for the Pens, and they take this one 2-1 to end the skid.
A six-game skid, to be exact, a 2-1 win over the Ducks, with Crosby scoring both those Pittsburgh goals. And you guys can rest easily. The Big 12 says none of its football games were compromised by those unencrypted helmet communications that we discussed yesterday.
Phew.
The teams getting their equipment upgraded, so those conversations will now be encrypted and harder to steal.
Harder to steal. Still possible, yes, to steal.
Oh, yeah. But it's now it will take some work and professionals.
I'm going to be honest. I am really surprised that Connor Stallions is not employed right now by someone bigger than whatever high school team he's defensive coordinator for in Michigan somewhere. You watch that documentary. This dude's got his P's and
got
Q's.
Skills.
Yeah, he's, or I don't know, dots the I's and crosses the T's.
But you have to understand, there are probably 100 Connor Stallions out there who aren't getting caught. Not getting caught right is probably the most important skill for that kind of position.
So you're saying he might be the worst of the
Connor
Stallions?
Yeah, actually, right. He's the worst.
My bad. I mean, the dude was wearing, like, a disguise on the sideline.
It is funny. Like, that came out, and there are a bunch of other schools are like, yeah, Michigan, I can't believe you're doing that, kind of looking sideways.
Yeah. Then slowly, like, peeling off their fake mustache.
84% of college football teams steal signs.
Like, some random guy just disappears into a bush. Yeah, like, honestly, whatever happened to that guy?
Yeah, God, I can't believe stealing signs. How dare you? Hey, make sure you don't get caught when you steal all the signs next week.
Well, that's a lot of sports, right? Like, we do this in baseball all the time, where before they outlawed, like, sticky stuff on your hands, people would rarely call each other out for that.
Yeah.
Because, like, all of a sudden, one manager calls out another one, and your fifth starter's over there, like, do-do-do-do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the outrage over the Astros scandal was the Astros are just the idiots who banging a garbage can that you could pick up on Twitter. Like, everybody, yeah, how many teams were stealing signs? Probably over half the league, I would imagine. Why wouldn't you? Because there's legal ways to do it, too. Like, generally, like, yeah, I think the most important, we've figured it out. The most important thing about a cheater is not getting caught, not how good you're cheating.
Is that what we figured out? Is that the moral
That's
of the story?
That's the moral of the story.
All right.
It's college football. There are no morals.
You might be right about that. Speaking of one of the odd situations in college football, so Georgia's playing Florida this weekend, obviously, right? This is a massive game. Georgia backup quarterback Jaden Rashada, do you know what's interesting about this game?
Yeah.
He's currently suing
Florida
head coach Billy Napier in an NIL dispute. The fact that Jaden Rashada is saying that they promised him lots of money that they were never able to come through on. So the backup quarterback for one team is suing the head coach for the other team that they're playing. It doesn't get any more college football than that.
Yeah.
That's the underbelly right there.
I mean, Jaden Rashada is a poster child for everything that can possibly go wrong with NIL.
It is true.
Luckily, it all happened with him. I mean, that's interesting. Hopefully for Georgia, he will will be playing. Like, is he? He's not even the backup. Is he? He's so young still.
That is true.
Yeah.
Bogish, thank you so much for all those headlines. Let's turn our attention now to a woman who is in the Radio Hall of Fame. She's been called a trailblazer. She's been called an inspiration, and that's just by me in the last hour. Susan Waldman is the radio voice of the New York Yankees. Susan, thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm okay, Maggie. How are you? We're going to talk Yankees. I thought we were talking Patriots today because you guys are talking football.
We don't really want to depress Patriots. You. We don't want to depress you too much.
No. We got a quarterback now. We just have to keep him healthy and get people around him. Are the Jets running the table? Because now that's what I hear. After last night, the Jets are going to run the table and make the playoffs. Okay? Is that what we're on to?
You know what? I mean, Susan, if you're buying everything Aaron Rodgers is selling, I've got some beachfront property in Idaho for you. Okay, so let's unpack a little bit of what happened here.
Okay.
And again, thank you for joining us. It was obviously thrilling for the Yankees to get back to the World Series. It had been so long, but you know, your boots on the ground, you're following this team every minute, every day. Let's start and work backwards. The vibe in the clubhouse, Susan, you've been there for wins, you've been there for losses. What was it like and how did it compare to years past?
All year, you mean?
No, after they lost.
This is very different because it's the vibe. You know, when you lose and it's awful. It was awful in there. They didn't open the clubhouse for a half an hour because evidently everybody talked. They had, you know, Boone had talked, and then everybody got to say something. You know, this team, when you look at it, and the vibe is one thing, and I don't put a lot of. Validity on love and stuff because everybody loves each other. But this team was different, and I think it was because the sums of the parts were greater than the parts individually. And I'm not talking about Soto and Judge and Gerrit Cole. Let's take them out of the equation and put them in a corner. Everybody else, there was a lot wrong with this team. And that last game, everything that was wrong all year came out in that fifth inning. The only thing that didn't happen was somebody getting thrown out on the base pass. This is something that you've watched all year. And when you've got people that either are playing out of position or they're told to be someplace that maybe other analytics don't do, this is what happens. Unfortunately, it happened in the fifth inning, and that's what I saw. Anthony Rizzo, for example. Everybody talking about Rizzo not taking the ball to first base. That's how he plays. That's how he plays because he believes that the pitcher should always cover first base. Now, other first basemen don't do that. And Mark Teixeira, for example, never threw to the pitcher. He would do it himself if he could get there. But that isn't how Rizzo plays. Gerrit Cole should have covered first base. Sure, he should have. Gerrit Cole had a few other things going on in that inning. How to get out of a jam when his defense was falling apart in back of him. And when you see that look on his face, maybe you should have run to first base. But those are the kinds of things that happen when, you know, that's how you play. That's how they've played all year. And it was shocking, surprising, not so much.
Susan, it's Andrew Perloff. I want to say, by the way, Maggie praises you. She does that behind off mic every day. I hear about how much she looks up to you. So I just wanted to say that. But I have to tell you, I'm not a Yankees fan, but I was a little bit of a sucker when they went up 5-0 in game 5. I actually started to believe, like, wait, maybe it is possible that this team could make a historic comeback. Did you actually let yourself believe, well, maybe this is a series again?
I absolutely did. I had already packed. I had gotten up. I couldn't sleep that day because I'm like that. I had packed for Los Angeles. I was positive we were going to Los Angeles. And it was because it was Cole. This is why they got him. And then, of course, you know, the 5-0, but I've seen that disappear too. But those are the kinds of things. Sure, I think everybody believes it. I'm not quite sure I thought they could win because I actually, if you look at it, I think the Dodgers are actually a better team. But there were ways that the Yankees could win. And when I saw, obviously, Judge start to hit and the things that went on that field, of course you think you can. I don't know if they could have won, but I was positive we were going back to Los Angeles.
Susan Waldman is the Radio Hall of Famer. She's also the one of the radio voices of the Yankees, baseball analyst, along with John Sterling. Did a great job on the postseason. It was fun to have John back as well, Susan.
Yeah, it was.
You know this team so well. As I said, you're there every game, every minute, starting in spring training all the way to the very end. Who's it going to be hardest for to turn the page on this? Because it was an all-time embarrassing half inning. And even when the Yankees retook the lead with the Stanton hit, they still found a way to lose that game in incredible fashion. Who's going to be mm-hmm. hardest for them to move on?
I mean, who on the team?
Yeah.
Aaron Judge. He said it'll stick with him until he dies, and I believe him. He took that very, very personally because, quite frankly, Aaron Judge carried this team for 6 months. And if you take Aaron Judge off this team, there's nowhere near that. But I think besides the mental aspect of it, you really have to look at how this team was built and what was going on the field and who was there. And you look at the Dodgers and how they built this team. They kept adding and adding and adding. The Yankees at the deadline had a chance to get people. They had a chance to get people. The Dodgers went out and got Jack Flaherty and they got Michael Kopech. That didn't happen in New York. And you have to keep adding and adding. And, you know, when you build a bullpen on, well, he can get him out. Yeah, you can do that. And instead of going out and getting someone like that, because you don't want to give up somebody or something, or you have it's a different way of looking at baseball. And we can talk about the emotional thing all you want. If you look at it, look at this year. They got very little production out of left field. Alex Verdugo was saying, I wish I had been better because I'm a better player than this. Well, he is. But they got little production out of left field. They got very little production out of third base. They got very little production out of first base. I'm talking offensively. And very little production from behind the plate. The bullpen blew up totally in July, and they still got there. But it was like we were putting it together with masking tape and Elmer's glue. It was not thought out the way the way they used to do that around here. And they do it differently now because it is analytics, and I understand the Dodgers do that too. But look at the difference of the people the Yankees brought in at the deadline and that the Dodgers brought in.
Susan, when you look at this offseason, the fielding and the base running and things like that, do you think they take a different approach to more, say, fundamentally sound players that they try to bring in?
Well, I hope they do, but I don't know what you do. Are they going to spend all their money and try and outspend Steve Cohen for Juan Soto? I don't know. If you do that, then you're going to have to fill in with people that aren't, you know, that kind of star power. Are they going to be so intent on bringing him back here? And he will go to the highest bidder. He will go to the highest bidder, I have no doubt. One that can win. There aren't that many that can pay him. But then you have to look at other things. Is it worth it to bring back Juan Soto and pay this all back? Or do you maybe take that money and go sign Alex Bregman to play third and Pete Alonso to play first base? Do you do that instead? That's what I would like to look at. Is there anybody coming up in the minor leagues that I don't know that there's anybody that can come up and play first base? They don't have a first baseman. Unless they re-sign Anthony Rizzo. And are you going to do that? Are you going to put... I mean, I think he's a wonderful player and he's great to have in that clubhouse, but he's going to be 36 years old.
Susan Waldman's joining
Those
us.
Those are the kinds of things they have to think about. And if they, you know, if they do that, it's going to be different. If it's not going to change, I think that they're good enough offensively to pummel people for most of the year. But the Los Angeles Dodgers are neither the Kansas City Royals nor the Cleveland Guardians.
Susan, the Juan Soto aspect of all of this, and the report out of the New York Post yesterday was 12 teams have already inquired about Juan Soto.
I'm sure
Scott Boras loves getting that number out there, right, to make this as much leverage as humanly possible. But I think the question is twofold. One, do you think the Yankees believed if they put their best foot forward that Juan Soto would fall in love with the team and maybe give them a bit of a discount? And then secondly, do you think the Yankees are actually going to be the highest bidder?
Well, that only Hal Steinbrenner can tell you that. if they thought all you have to, and I love Juan Soto. I mean, he knows who he's 26 years old. He knows exactly who he is. He never said a wrong thing the whole year. He's really a grown-up. He played the whole year at 25. He's really a grown-up, and he's really something. What he is not is a right fielder. And those you have to think about that, too. Are you going to break the bank for Juan Soto and still have to put Aaron Judge in center field? And I'm not saying he did a bad job. He did a wonderful job. But he's a gold glove right fielder. And, of course, he can play center. But do you want to go through that again, have him there? Those are the kinds of things everybody is so focused on Juan Soto. There are 8 other positions on this field that you can't fill right now. And that's why, I mean, it's wonderful to have Judge and Soto. It really is. But there are other people, and when you get to the playoffs, how many times have we seen this? It's always pitching. Always pitching. And mistakes made on the field. People lose because of mistakes. You saw it in 86. You've seen it in 78. You've seen it everywhere. Forever. And if they don't get... If they don't fill those positions correctly, then you're gonna replay what happened this year.
Susan, thank you so much for doing this. We're just flat out of time. You're the best. Appreciate it. And you and John had a great call. I imagine it had to be bittersweet, not just ending the World Series the way it did for the Yankees, but also knowing that this is really it, retirement for John Sterling.
Yeah, it really is. He's had an amazing career. I have a feeling he's going to pop up every now and then. But, Maggie, thank you for asking me. I miss hearing your voice, and you're doing a great job. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan Waldman. Again, the Radio Hall of Famer, as I said, an inspiration, a trailblazer.
Yeah.
And just one of the reasons why I'm sitting in this seat is because of the work that Susan did and continues to do.
Absolutely. And I think she just nailed the Yankees.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, that
she knows him better than anybody.
In that 8 minutes, you really understood everything that is happening with the franchise.
I'm telling you, people were surprised, like shocked, but not surprised about that fifth inning.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Because this has been the issue, the fundamentals. It's just not a fundamentally sound team that made it all the way to the World Series.
Well, there is that.
Yeah. 855-212-4227. All right. Appreciate Susan there. And yeah, now the Juan Soto watch is on. A lot of very interested parties in Juan Soto, but she's right. He's not a good fielder. But he makes up for it because he's such an amazing hitter.
It's unbelievable that he was a Gold Glove finalist this year.
That's like, are people watching?
Meanwhile, Francisco Lindor wasn't one.
Nico.
Oh my God.
I know.
Francisco Lindor MVP movement here in New York was the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Hey, look at the war numbers, all right? 855-212-4227. Perloff and I have NFL and college picks to make, and we will do that next.
Maggie and Perloff's NFL picks.
All right, Pat Boyle in for EJ today. Pat, can you give us our records for the 5 college and NFL picks that we make each week?
Yeah, so Maggie, you are 25-15. You went 2-3 last week. You hit the Chargers and you hit Vanderbilt. You lost on Jets, Patriots under. You lost on Tyreek Hill over receptions, and you lost on Navy Notre Dame under. So you're 25-15. Perloff an even 20-20. He was 2-3 last week. You hit on Oklahoma +21 and Jameis Winston over passing yards. Lost on the Dolphins -4, Bills, Seahawks over, and Ohio State, Nebraska over.
Steady Eddie, Perloff. Unlike Red Hot Maggie. 25-15 is pretty darn good.
I know, but I can feel myself coming back to the pack because I don't like any of the games on the board this week, so don't feel confident about anything. That's my disclaimer. Pro, once you get us started, we do 2 college picks, a side and over-under, then 3 NFL picks. Go ahead with your college picks.
Okay. I'm going to go back to the well here. I've had success betting on Miami Hurricanes over, so I'm going to go Duke-Miami over 54.5. And then I want to jump in on this Indiana Hoosier party. I am going.
I'm sure they're going to be so glad to have you.
Well, you know what? Indiana Hoosier, that's not a front runner. It's football. It's not basketball. So I am allowed on it. They are a lovable underdog. So right now it is 7.5, laying 7.5 at Michigan State. I've lost against Michigan State earlier this season, but I'm going Indiana. Those are my college picks. What do you got?
Okay. I'm going back to the Vander. Wait.
Sorry. Yeah. So what is it, Indiana?
Indiana, minus 7.5 at Michigan State. Duke, Miami, over 54.5.
Got it. Got the over. I just wanted to make sure it was 7 in the hook.
You could ask me afterwards. Okay.
Got to make sure they're right on the record at all times.
That actually, that line has moved around a little bit. I want to get it at 7. But anyway, go ahead, Maggie.
Well, we are where we are. For my college picks, I'm going back to the well on Vandy. I find Vandy plus 7.5 at Auburn. Now, usually I like to bet Vandy at home, Pearl. That's the secret sauce. You got to be in Nashville. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a disrespectful line to Diego Pavia. And I don't know if maybe the public, like myself, are completely enamored with this dude, the Johnny Manziel 2.0. But Auburn is not a great team. I'm sorry. They're not. And I think Vanderbilt, they're scrappy. So give me the +7.5 on the road, Vandy at Auburn.
Love that
one. As far as my over-under is concerned, Ole Miss in Arkansas. You think Lane Kiffin, oh, this is some high-octane offense. It's not. It's the defense is good for Ole Miss and Arkansas as well. This is an early game. I believe it's an 11 a.m. local time. Isn't this what Lane was complaining, part of what Lane was complaining about?
Oh, yeah.
He never gets night games. 53.5 is the total. I will take the under on Ole Miss and Arkansas. Okay, Pearl, for NFL, a side, a total, and a player prop.
Okay.
We have 4 minutes.
Nick Kostos' upset of the week was Broncos-Ravens, right? I am not as confident in the Broncos as he is, but I do like the over in that game because I am trusting that the Ravens' defense is not great. Now, Bo Nix, you have no idea. You've never seen him against a good team, but I'm going to go over on that one. My side, I did this before Nick said this. I'm going to bet against the Panthers as long as they don't put Andy back in. Now, I'm so angry that they're not going Andy Dalton because Andy said he was healthy. They're still going with Bryce Young. It seems like a bad idea. I don't know where they're going with Bryce Young or Andy Dalton, but I'm taking the Saints right now at -7. And my player prop, I'm going back to Broncos Ravens. I'm going Cortland Sutton over 48.5. receiving yards.
Oh, wow. You could, you know, parlay that together.
I am.
Okay. For me in the NFL, I'm going to take Arizona. I'm going to lay the 1.5 against the Bears. They welcome the Bears in. Now, I like the Bears' defense and defense's travel, but is there going to be a little bit of a hangover from last week? You lose in that way. And the Cardinals are kind of scrappy. They're kind of good. I like watching them until they probably burn me on this bet. But for now, I'll take Arizona. I'll lay the 1.5. For my over-under, Kansas City and Tampa Bay, that's a Monday night affair. Give me the under 45.5. Tampa's still finding themselves after losing two of their best wide receivers. And Kansas City's defense is very good.
Yeah, I bet both teams run the ball like crazy in this one, which is good for you.
Yeah, hopefully not a ton of possessions each way, longer drives that will lend itself to the under 45.5. And then for my player prop, Pearl, if I'm going to your favorite team, we'll go to the red-hot Philadelphia Eagles, winners of 3 in a row. They welcome the hapless Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't think this is going to be a blowout. I think it's going to be close, which means carries for Saquon Barkley. Give me over 19.5 Saquon Barkley carries in this game. Those are my 3 NFL picks.
I love it. I looked at A.J. Brown over 79.5, and I feel like he's going to destroy the Jags. The Jags secondary, not good. Okay, you want to recap? I have Duke-Miami over 54.5. My Indiana Hoosiers covering 7.5. I have in the NFL, Cortland Sutton over 48.5 receiving yards. Broncos-Ravens over 46.5. And Derek Carr, you better show up, man. Saints -7 against Bryce Young and the Panthers. What do you got?
Yeah, Derek Carr's never let you down.
Yeah, true.
I'll take Vanderbilt +7.5 at Auburn. Give me Ole Miss Arkansas under 53.5 for NFL picks. Give me Arizona. I'll lay the 1.5 against the Bears, the visiting Bears. Kansas City Tampa under 45.5 and Saquon Barkley over 19.5 carries. Perloff's Eagles welcoming in the Jacksonville Jaguars. Is this a Doug Peterson revenge game?
I don't know about that. By the way, do you have a candy hangover today? I definitely have it. Like, I ate a lot of Reese's last night, and I don't eat candy.
You never eat candy.
No, I have like a low-level headache and a desire to eat an Almond Joy. I don't know what's going on.
Just sweating out peanut butter out of every pore.
I'm feeling like the after effects of a wild Halloween. And my shorts were really short this year. I think that restricted the blood flow.
Yep. That's the show. Thank you, Pat Boyle. Thank you, Nico Skarlatos. Thank you to Andrew Bogish, Andrew Kaplan.